Hello, this is John Alsop, and this is your Internet Marketing 5 a Day. I seem to have myself a troll, which is all very exciting. Anyway, hello, if you're listening. First off, I won't go into the details of this because it's all in the book, Call to Action. But just to say that persuasive architecture, which is basically organizing a website so that it converts well, that book outlines a process for developing a website that is persuasive. And it goes through the stages uncovery, which is a bit of a horrible word, but there you go, storyboarding, development, wireframing, prototyping, and optimization. So that, you know, if you're interested in doing that, go and have a look. Now, the Kick-Ass Copywriting book, in there, she's recommending, I think it's a she, it is a she, isn't it? Yeah, Susan, what is that? Gunelius, there you go. She says, if you're going to start a blog, you need to commit to writing every day and to responding to comments and to marketing your blog. And that's kind of true. I mean, you know, you can have a blog and do it every once a week or once a month. I mean, my blog's fallen a little bit into this, not disrepair. You know, I used to blog more than once a day, but that was kind of pre-social media, and I tried to resist social media because I wanted control of my own content. But actually, a lot of the purpose of blogging to kind of record the passing thoughts, if you like, end up in Facebook anyway. So really, my blog personally now is for more detailed thoughts. So I'm not doing it every day, but I do have a blog, and it does bring traffic, and so on. But so I guess what she's saying from a writing point of view is, if you want to create a commercially successful blog, if you really want to make blogging successful, then yes, obviously you're going to have to put some time into it, and yes, regularity is very important. Every day is really important, and that's why I'm doing this podcast every day, because daily is important. It becomes part of people's rhythm then, part of people's routine. If it's not every day, then, you know, it's occasional. I mean, I've got, this might be more information than you want to hear, but I have a treatment that I have to apply twice a week, and it's an absolute pain because I never remember to do it. You know, if it comes to Wednesday and I think I should do it, and you know, it's always possible to delay it till the next day, Thursday, and by the time it gets to Friday, I might as well wait till Sunday, and so on. It is just a nightmare. It would be much better if it was something that I had to do every day, and then it would get into my routine. So that's the kind of some of the thinking behind being regular with your output. One principle, and this is from the conversion strategies article that was in Forbes magazine, I think. It's just an idea, but around the call to action is potentially where you should include social pressure stuff. So where you have the Facebook button that says 12 of your friends like this and another 180 people like it as well. If that were right close to your call to action button, that article is saying that's where that impact that would be most impactful, as opposed to having it at the bottom of the page or in the page furniture or whatever. So that's certainly something to test. Next up is this idea of it was an experiment where somebody was trying to get doctors, I think it was, to complete a questionnaire. And they sent off the questionnaire, and with it, they sent a £20 check. And that's a thank you for completing the questionnaire ahead of time. So that was better. So they got 78% response to that questionnaire. And that's better, obviously, than the 66% that they got if they sent out, we will send you a cheque for £20 if you complete the questionnaire. So the difference there is reciprocation. It's the power of, we've just done something nice for you, and now you kind of feel some desire to reciprocate that favour. So that's a kind of a real measure of that. Now, how many people, just out of interest, only 26% of people cashed the cheque but didn't complete the questionnaire. So, yeah, there was a small percent. You would think, well, I'm giving away this money and I'm not guaranteed to get anything back. But the, you know, only 20% did. 26% did that. So that was all kind of quite interesting. It was just the power. I'm not necessarily saying you should do that for questionnaires. It was just an illustration of the power of reciprocation, that whatever that is, it sounds like. So 76% giving the check away, and 66% just promising to give the check away, means the reward was the same. The difference was we trusted you, and we did this for you before you did anything at all. The other thing, the final thing, and not the favourite thing. The favourite thing was the social pressure around calls to action yesterday. Okay, the final thing is, it's easy to knock companies and easy to knock the banks and so on, but it's nice sometimes to focus on companies that are doing the right things. If you read The Corporation, you get this idea that companies are genetically, legally bound to not do good in society, because the theory goes, or the idea goes, if you're a director of a company, you're not playing with your money, you're playing with shareholders' money, and your only obligation is to maximize return on the shareholders' money. So you legally can't pay more than the going rate to someone, you can't give to charity, you can't do any of those things that might benefit society, because it's not your money to do that. Your job as a director of a company is to maximize return. This, I'm just saying, this is what the Corporation, that book, says. And so the good has to come from the shareholders, who benefit from the money being made, and then they can go out and be philanthropic. So that's the idea. So you're doing good by creating wealth for the owners of the business, who can then do what they like with the money. And even if they go and spend it on a massive luxury yacht or something, that's creating employment and so on. So whatever. But it is nice to see when companies do this, and I guess this is, I don't know whether this is because they're in the Far East, or I don't know how they manage to do this, because it flies in the face of the Corporation book, but and it is historic a little. It's 1997, but and it's from Roddick, I think, mentioned this. So Samsung spent 40% of its profits on social contributions. 40% of its profits on social contributions. Samsung. That's a lot of money. Examples, adopt a river and supporting the elderly. And there was some children's stuff in there as well. Samsung spent 40% of its profits on social contributions in 1997. Don't know what it's doing now, but you know that is a very big deal. So I'm kind of curious about what that says about companies over there compared to companies over here. And I'm curious about what would happen if a company over here spent 40% of its profits on social contributions. What would happen in terms of reciprocation? Because there you have, all right, I will support this company because it does great things in my community, or it helped my grandma, or it you know is involved in educating my kids, or whatever. So all of that is really interesting. So I just raise it as a point of interest, and of course. You knowing that, perhaps you will spend more money with Samsung. Given the choice, you might spend money with Samsung, or you might. I don't know where Samsung are from, but if you know, you might think, well, that country has some good companies, you know, some good ethics, and maybe will. So there are some rub-off effects on associated brands as well, is what I'm saying. You know, the fact that I'm repeating that story, the fact that that story got in the Anita Roddick book, and the fact that I read it how many, near 20 years later, 15 years later, and I'm talking about it now, speaks to the power of those kinds of stories in marketing. So that's it for today, and... we'll talk tomorrow. All right. Take care. Thanks for listening.